Yeah, it was kind of versus Belgium. It's going to be in front of like 42,000 people and my entire Canadian family. So I was nervous and excited. While I was walking out, I turned. I tried to look left and right for the family, but I couldn't see them.
That's a very special moment to walk out with the team at their first World Cup appearance in 36 years. There's a lot of people older than you who were watching their first Canadian World Cup game first time, such as myself. So that's really cool you got to do that.
Yeah, it's insane.
On November 23rd, when Canada kicked off against Belgium in their first World Cup match since 1986, it had been anything but a boring few months of preparation.
And this is concerning. Oh. Alphonso Davies.
I'm feeling for him. You can see he's got a hamstring injury. I hope it's not too bad.
So close to a World Cup with Canada. Your heart goes out.
Goal scorer Jonathan David mounting a protest of sorts, covering the Nike logo on his jersey. The 31 other nations heading to the world's biggest tournament are all getting new uniforms, but not Canada.
Canadian keeper Max Crépeau got the start in this one as his LAFC took on the Philadelphia Union. He comes up big to keep the game tied 2-2, but he immediately calls for help. Crépeau suffered a fractured leg that left viewers in shock.
Despite the scares and distractions, Canada had arrived in Dubai on November 16th in high spirits. Davies' injury had been less serious than expected, the squad's bench players had performed well in prior friendlies, and the next day they were playing their final pre-tournament friendly against Japan, a last-minute tune-up before they were off to Qatar for a daunting opening fixture against the second-ranked international side in the world, Belgium.
It's official, Belgium are the third best team at this year's World Cup, taking care of England on Saturday.
I think looking at the Belgium team, they have a couple of special players within their group. And when you look at the likes of De Bruyne, Hazard, that can change things on the flip of a bat, you know, I really like what I see from this Belgium team. And I hope England can produce that type of player in the next couple of years or by the time we go to Qatar in 4 years' time.
Canada had chosen to arrive in the Middle East with about a week to spare before their opening match. The major time zone shift and cultural changes presented an interesting problem for coaches. You obviously want your players adjusted to their new surroundings, but there was also the risk of going too early, risking homesickness and all other sorts of trouble.
I think we're pinching ourselves. It's just real now. It's getting more real by the hour.
The U.S., for example, had been the first team to arrive in Qatar on the 10th of November, a week and a half before the tournament kicked off. Brazil, on the other hand, were fashionably late, arriving the night before the opening match of Qatar versus Ecuador. Back home, as the conversation in our country shifted to soccer, I could feel even the experts I'd surrounded myself with for painting the pitch red were beginning to become fans more than analysts. How far is Canada making the World Cup? How many games are they playing?
Well, why not be optimistic and say, let's get to the last 16? That's what I would say. And I think it's very important that you can look at those games 2 and 3 and think they can get something from them. Potentially, you never know, playing the first team, sometimes the best team in the group is Belgium, but the best time to play the best team is the first game. It's the best time. Traditionally, the stats will tell you that as well. So there's a chance there, you never know.
They're going to play more than 3 games.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think they're playing more than 3 games. It's going to be work. They're going up against specifically Atiba Hutchinson in that midfield. They got to deal with De Bruyne and Modric. That's not easy. But this is a really smart team.
Yeah, and if you could steal one player from this current Canadian team to play with your generation of Canadian teams, and it can't be Alphonso Davies.
It can't be Davies. I was going to say, are you kidding me? It's not Alphonso Davies. Okay. I was going to say, that's a tough one. There's a lot of guys in there.
When the World Cup draw had been announced in April, Canada had been given 13-1 odds of beating Belgium. The odds on the day of the game were slashed in half to 6.5-1. There was a growing sense that the Canucks could shock at least one of two of Europe's biggest sides.
There's a lot of things to be positive about, knowing that the task is extremely monumental to get out the group.
Now, I'd been diligent in my research for the perfect place to watch the first Canada game. Eventually, I'd settled on Café Diplomatico, an iconic Toronto diner that had been one of the few places that had shown games in the city back in 1986. Sportsnet was having a party there, and the Dip, as the diner is affectionately called, had set up a 300-person tent for fans to come watch in, complete with a live band and a bar. I was skeptical that there would be enough demand for a spot at the Dip to support the means of such an extravagant viewing party. But as I called friends the night before and the morning of the game, and more of them called in sick, I felt like I was seeing the revolution I had imagined take place in real time.
Canada, priority over everything, school, everything.
I'm self-employed. I can make my own hours. I canceled this day a long time ago. I made sure there was nothing going on. A lot of preparation into today.
I asked my dad. He said yes.
Not only did the Dip sell out, but it was so rowdy and packed that even Sid ended up leaving before the game started.
I went down to Café Diplomatico yesterday morning, and the setup that Café Diplomatico had, they had a tent with 200 seats ready to go. They made an amazing setup. But my thing was, I left around 12:45. I, in my mind, said, I have to be watching this game alone so I can soak it all in. I can't watch a sporting event that big in an environment like that. Now, they were very welcoming. It would have been a great afternoon.
Seeing sons and their fathers prepare to watch Canada in the World Cup for the first time in both their lives struck a chord with me. It reminded me of how my dad would pull me out of school midday to watch England World Cup games at home, citing religious reasons to my school for my absence. And as I thought about my history with the English national team and the connection to my family it gave me, I remembered an exchange I'd had with Sid in June about the potential for Canada to face his country of heritage, Portugal, in a matchup.
If Portugal were to play Canada, could happen this year in a World Cup. Obviously, I'm cheering for Canada because Portugal's my team. I've flown to Europe numerous times to watch that team play. But that's my team. My home is Canada, obviously. And I don't think it's a hard decision to make. Like, I'm not going to, like, DX suck it to every Portuguese player. But I wear a Canada jersey that day, 100%.
I didn't know it at the time, but Sid was encapsulating exactly how I would feel when that match began to kick off against Belgium. I know others felt the same. During prior World Cups, the street of my family home in Kingston was lined with flags on the front porches of family homes. A Holland flag for the family with Dutch in-laws. A France flag for the family with the daughter doing a year abroad in Paris. An Italy flag for the... All right, Italy didn't qualify for the World Cup again.
Oh!
But you get the gist. This year on my street, you exclusively saw Canada flags. We weren't having to sacrifice our national identity to care about the World Cup. We were getting to amplify it. I knew during our national anthem that my support for the English national side would never be the same again. And as kickoff approached at Café Dip and thousands of other establishments all across the nation, hundreds of Canadians were out of work and out of school, packing rooms to watch us play the first World Cup game of our new era. Maybe an era that would be ours.
Oh, here's the feeling. The expectations of a nation on his shoulders. Oh my God. It's Alphonso Davies against Thibaut Courtois.
I've watched the first 20 minutes of our performance against Belgium somewhere between 5 and 10 times. It's still hard for me to believe what they did to one of the top sides in the world. Belgium isn't just struggling to attack, they can barely get out of their own half. We bossed them around, making the surprising starting lineup decisions John Herdman had made seem like strokes of genius. Canada did fade as the game wore on and their legs got heavy. A poor defensive breakdown off a single Belgian long ball right before the half was a reminder of just how laser-focused you have to be at the highest level. But Canada shook off the disappointment and dug deep in the second half to put Belgium under relentless pressure. Belgium has arguably the best keeper in the world in Courtois, and Canada's finishing was often imprecise, to say the least. But the ability to bounce back in a tournament is pivotal, and not every team has it. Canada looked so likely to score at the end of the game that I bit the bullet and stayed at Café Dip, despite it making me an hour late to my Hockey Night in Canada shift, which is, quite possibly, the worst show possible to use soccer as an excuse for being late to. I wasn't proud of my tardiness, but as we mounted attack after attack searching for the equalizer, my body literally wouldn't let me leave. After the game, it wasn't immediately clear how the early Davies penalty would affect the team, or how Herdman's honest post-match interview would change the narrative surrounding the Canadian team.
I just showed them they belong here, told them they belong here, and we're going to go and F Croatia. That's as simple as it gets.
What was immediately clear, though, was how shocked the rest of the world was at what it had seen from the Canadians.
Yeah, Roberto Martinez said after the game that Canada were the better team.
They were, from beginning to end. And
Canada controls their own destiny at this moment. Coming off this performance, if they can play like this against Croatia and Morocco, they will go through it.
Canada had put up the best expected goal tally of any nation to that point in the tournament. The analytics scores how likely a team's attacking performance was to generate goals. Canada's chances amounted to over 2.5 expected goals compared to Belgium's 0.8. And this comparison was both extremely encouraging and also slightly haunting, considering the Canucks had still yet to get the absolutely crucial first World Cup goal monkey off of their back. But as I talked to Canadians visiting Qatar, all sharing incredible stories of community and passion, I couldn't help but feel like Canada's jaw-dropping performance against Belgium was proof that I was catching the perfect story at the perfect time.
Yeah, so my mom and dad flew here from Perth, Ontario. The game we went to was Canada versus Belgium, and we had seats right behind the net, which was unbelievable. Like, there was probably at least 20,000 Canadians all marching from the metro all the way to the stadium to be there with my dad. You know, my dad's 68, and it was just an incredible experience. But there was Canadian flags everywhere. Like, just the whole stadium was Canadian flags. It was unbelievable. I've never actually been to lots of sporting events in my life. I've never in my life felt that kind of energy in a stadium. It was incredible. Like, it just gives me goosebumps, like, right now even talking about it.
We were meeting up at the second Canadian men's Team Canada match. So we were on the bus, and there were three guys there. They were all painted in Canadian colors and everything. And so they asked us, and we were full out in our Canadian stuff. And he asked where we were from. And so we each said, you know, Ottawa, and my sister Carmi was from Calgary. And then they said, we're from Cape Breton. And so then Carmi and I said, well, we're from Cape Breton too. And they said, we're in Cape Breton. We said, New Ottawa. And they said, we are too. And so then the story went on. They're the Martin brothers, and they come from a family of 13. They knew our dad. We actually played soccer with their sisters. And it was just like an old home party on the bus.
And while I had tried to stay level-headed in documenting Canada's journey, as Painting the Pitch Red released and began to find its audience, I could even feel myself starting to break down the wall of caution I had built up.
Henry Standage joining us. He has created a Sportsnet audio series and hosts Painting the Pitch Red. Give us the reason to believe in this team this year.
I'll go on the record with this, Mike. Canada will not fail to score a goal this tournament. This is a very different side. This is a strong side. This isn't, you know, an underdog tale. This is a team ready to make its moment.
Of course, I wasn't the only one who had lost control. In that post-match press conference, Herdman had admitted to a global audience that he had told his team to go F Croatia next to lift up their spirits.
And we're going to go and F Croatia.
It was the type of comment that surely happens all the time behind closed doors, but this was a different stage, and the pitchforks came out quickly.
And in sports, what you don't want to do is give bulletin board material
right.
to an already more talented individual or team.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a candidate who's in your second World Cup ever, who's still looking for your first World Cup goal, and didn't even win the game against Belgium, that everybody is saying, look how great you look right. versus Belgium. What you least want to do is upset a team that individually and collectively has done more than your federation.
Herdman's supporters tried to equate the comments as some sort of masterclass of distraction.
He's a smart guy, right? He's trying to distract away from some of the other stories around this team, like the penalty, that type of thing. So I think it's just great.
The reality is that Herdman almost certainly didn't mean the comment maliciously or disrespectfully, nor was it some Machiavellian scheme to take the spotlight off his players. But that's what the theater of a World Cup does. It makes us overanalyze everything. Once Croatian airwaves heard of the comment, it would spiral into an international tabloid spectacle.
Today, there's a Croatian newspaper that I'm sure you've seen by now had the head of John Herdman, but not the body. It was like, I guess, a cartoon body or someone else's body covered up by a very tiny maple leaf. And the headline says, "You have the mouth, but do you have the balls as well?" That's a loose translation, but the sentiment of the headline certainly there. So this is something that is making waves, Blake. Canada, first World Cup match in 36 years, and I would say, like, the John Herdman thing is what? One of the top five stories of the World Cup now?
What was already a huge match had become a referendum on Canada's testicular fortitude.
You know, I get a text from my wife saying, you need to work out before you come home. Brilliant. Look, I think those moments, you know, after that game, it was an emotional moment I had in the flash interview, and you know, I think it's a learning moment. I was a little bit too honest to the question, and yeah, you know, you get them moments in your career. My first World Cup, I'll learn from that one and just keep moving forward. But I think the beauty is for our boys, we've kept it light and bright. We're having a good laugh behind the scenes, and just excited at this opportunity.
It wasn't the worst thing in the world. With the match on a Sunday and the war of words dominating the headlines since Wednesday, it wasn't a matter of if, but by how much Canada would break its viewership for a men's national team match. It was fun to feel patriotic about being in a machismo yelling contest with a reigning World Cup finalist. And when you start the match with the greatest soccer moment in your country's history, it feels like a dream. It was the exact moment soccer fanatics in this country had wanted to experience. Our first goal didn't come down 3-0 or even from a controversial penalty. It was a spectacular combination of teamwork, technique, and athleticism in the second minute of a must-win game after days of build-up. It was perfect. Strangers hugged, voices cracked, and Guinness pints happily spilt on floors. It was the exact type of moment that makes someone understand the appeal of soccer and give them a feeling they want to experience by tuning in again. The end. Just kidding. Croatia won 4-1 and utterly outclassed Canada. I compare it to a Floyd Mayweather fight. Everyone gets all excited that he's taking shots in the first two rounds.
Right as Logan Paul tries to pressure Floyd, trying to unload now, throwing punches from righty, different angles. Floyd covering up.
Before he inevitably figures the opponent out and wins 8 of the next 10 rounds, showing the experience and skill that makes him who he is. Croatia and their brilliant midfield figured us out and exposed the weaknesses in Canada's midfield and defense to the entire world. And of course, the Croatians let them hear about it after the match.
I have to say thanks to the head coach of Canada for the motivation. I do believe that he could have chosen better words to express himself. He could have formulated it a bit differently. In the end, Croatia demonstrated who effed whom.
By the time the final whistle blew, the performance felt more like a bummer and a reminder of how far we still had to go. But really, the most disappointing part was how we continued to become more agitated back at home.
This is true.
All right, Alphonso Davies in our Canadian men's team, final World Cup game tomorrow against Morocco. Alphonso Davies, thumbs up, right? We're all fans of Alphonso
superstar.
Davies.
Superstar.
Right? Well, believe it or not, he's taking heat. And he's not just taking heat from any section of the media. It's the Canadian media. He's taking heat for not talking post-game all the time. He took some heat for wearing earrings in a dressing room where he's one of the highest paid players. And quite frankly, he's being criticized a lot. And here's a bit of the article. Nearly 48 hours after Alphonso Davies scored the first World Cup goal in the history of the Canadian men's team in a 4-1 loss to Croatia, he finally met with reporters on Tuesday evening. It arguably remains his responsibility, having benefited from a federally funded program to help promote the sport, especially at a time when so many eyes are on it. When you're wearing a Canada shirt, you're no longer a private enterprise. You are part of the public trust.
Whoa.
This is the biggest load of garbage I have ever read in my entire life.
We even began linking the top managers in the world to our head coaching position simply because of who their wives were.
Carlo Ancelotti, manager of Real Madrid, spoke to a journalist for a documentary on Amazon Prime. They talked about a bunch of things, tons of topics, you name it. And then, whoop, everyone's ears perked up because Canada was mentioned. He was asked if he would ever be interested in coaching a national team. And here was his response. Yes, I'd be interested in managing a national team, but now it's premature, certainly not for this World Cup. World Cup 2026, why not? Could be. Canada? I'd love to. Sure.
I and others noticed Herdman was speaking about his own feats with the press for the first time since he had taken the job.
Will you be the head coach of this team at the 2026 World Cup?
I will be tomorrow. I will be excited tomorrow. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, 11 years of work in this country. You know, I've been pioneering, you know, for a long period of time. And you'll not find anyone as passionate as I am about this program or about these players or about the staff. You'll not find anyone as passionate who wants to take the country to that next level. And you'll not meet anyone that's experienced this moment with this team. So in the learnings that I'll take from this to take into the next one. The one thing you've seen from us is we've always come back stronger. You know, 2015, we finished sixth place in the Women's Olympics. 2016, we go back-to-back podiums in over a century. 3 years later, they take a gold medal. We came to this World Cup. Thierry Henry told me, this team played them off the park. I'll take that, because if that's our foundation, we got a great 4 years ahead, and I can't wait to get after it.
It was a disheartening few days. Maybe it wasn't just the players and coaches who would benefit from a World Cup experience, but the fans as well. With our hopes of advancing in the tournament eliminated, our final match wouldn't be consequential, but it could be enlightening. When the draw had come out, many Canadians had circled Morocco as the easy win, basically because they weren't Belgium or Croatia, and in Canada, truthfully, we don't hear much about Morocco. But the reality is 32 teams make the World Cup and 80 countries have made the 22 World Cups that have taken place. There are exceptions, but as a general rule, if you qualify for the World Cup, you're probably decent. But in the case of Morocco, they would embarrass us in the first half. We were extremely poor, but a stroke of luck resulting in a Moroccan-owned goal gave us life before the half. And we would end the World Cup on a high, playing excellently and coming just inches shy of tying the game on an Atiba Hutchinson header late in the second half. Morocco would win Group F, and as of writing this, Canada is the only team to score on them in their four matches against us, Belgium, Croatia, and most recently Spain in the round of 16.
It wasn't to be today, but you know, I'm extremely proud of what I've achieved. And I'm proud that I was out there today with this group of team, the group of guys, and the way that we've played over the last, you know, 4 years, and my whole career with the national team, all the guys that have been there with me. It's a special achievement for me, and you know, I'm extremely happy about it to put this jersey on 100 times.
It would have been unbelievable to see Atiba Hutchinson, Canada's 39-year-old captain, ride off into the sunset with a goal. But he did at least become the oldest outfield player to start multiple World Cup matches. And while Canada will miss Hutchinson's leadership, there's no time to waste in making sure we develop the next generation of defenders and midfielders ahead of 2026. If you're looking for a reason to be optimistic, we're really starting to see all the things that failed to happen in 1986 happen now. Canadians are now going to Europe, and they're going to places that fit them and their career growth like a glove.
Alistair Johnston to Celtic, it looks like it's a done deal. This is a transfer match made in heaven.
Watford have signed Ismail Kone from MLS side Montreal, a record fee for them.
Even Canadians not in the current squad yet, playing in Christian Jack's Canadian Premier League, are being recruited.
Canadian youth international talent and York United forward Ronan Klatt is on the verge of a massive move to the Bundesliga to Werder Bremen.
And arguably just as important as the players, our soccer minds are becoming respected as well.
The Columbus Crew has officially named Wilfried Nancy as their new head coach. He spent 6 seasons in Montreal. 5 of those were as an assistant coach, and then the last year as a head coach.
This is a level of trust in our program that we've never had anywhere close to before. And as a cherry on top, just mere days after we discussed the need for a women's Premier League in Canada on Painting the Pitch Red Chapter 3, the first ever women's domestic league in the country was announced.
Yeah, we are announcing that we are building a women's professional soccer league in Canada. We're kicking off 2025, and it felt like after 6 months of work with myself and my business partner, Thomas Gilbert, that it was time to share that news with Canadians, share that we've got 2 founding teams, the Vancouver Whitecaps and Calgary Foothills, and 2 founding...
Canada will be a top seed in the 2026 World Cup draw automatically, just for being a host in what will already be a watered-down tournament with the format expanding from 32 to 48 teams. We will have an easier group with the opportunity to get better results. But developments such as not just our top players, but our role players going abroad and a larger commitment to creating our own soccer leagues are how we will actually begin to progress to the next level. Over half of Canada's current squad will still be under 30 when 2026 comes around. And the same kids who never forgot Alphonso Davies leaping through the air and breaking our World Cup deadlock at Khalifa International Stadium will be coming right down the pipeline. The World Cup made it abundantly clear that we're not a top soccer nation yet. But for the first time ever, it looks like we may actually be on our way to painting the pitch red in the future. Painting the Pitch Red was produced, written, and hosted by me, Henry Standage, and sound designed by Ryan Clark. Our executive producer was Amel Delich. Artwork for the series was created by Kayla Moaning and Valdemar Balza. Our creative liaisons were Benjamin Rosa and Johnny Curlew. Thanks to Senior Director of Original Content, Sam Nasrawi, the Director of Broadcast Creative, Hilding, and the Head of Audio Production at Pacific Content, Sean Cole, for bringing this series to life.